AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. And as usual on Tuesdays, we are joined by the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, that's Patrick Coulican, as we're going to be talking about some of the latest political stories that they've been working on, as well as some opinion pieces. As today, we'll be talking about the last few weeks of the legislative session, including the ethics hearing against State Senator Nicole Mitchell. We'll also be talking about some bills the legislature is working on, as well as Patrick's column on the recent congressional hearings with United Health Group. So lots to get to today. Patrick, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. So let's start things off with the state legislature and something that, of course, I and a lot of other people have been following. And that's what's been happening with Uber and Lyft, because those two companies are threatening to leave the city of Minneapolis after new requirements that the city recently passed. Uber and Lyft have said it would require them to pay too much money to their drivers, so they are threatening to leave the city. But the state legislature has stepped in and may have reached an agreement, although a caveat with the agreement is that neither of the companies, Uber or Lyft, were involved, as well as Governor Tim Walz, but could be a step towards trying to get this impasse resolved. So what exactly, Patrick, is in this agreement that the legislature has made that could potentially at least be a step towards ending the stalemate between the city of Minneapolis and Uber and Lyft?
Yeah, there's a number of hoops that are going to or hurdles that they're going to have to get over to get to a deal that everybody can live with. And I guess this would qualify as one of them, and that is an agreement between the city council, where the majority progressive bloc had really forced the issue to begin with, and then legislators who are really intent on getting a bill that can pass and that Tim Walz will sign. If you remember, he vetoed. It's the only veto of his tenure. He vetoed a bill last year with minimum rates, and he seemed to take seriously the threat that the companies would leave. So they have come down on the per mile price to $1.27 per mile and 49 cents per minute. But as you noted, the problem here is that it was a compromise that did not involve the two companies, and they still are now threatening to leave. And again, as you mentioned, they did not have the input of Governor Walz. His folks did put out a statement. They called it a positive step, but we're far from having a deal. A really key player in all this is Senator Omar Fatah. He was the chief author of the bill last year, the bill that got vetoed. He, I think, is seen as close to the Minneapolis City Council's progressive bloc, as well as the activist driver group that has been advocating for the minimum rates, although I should note that there's division amongst drivers about what to do. So in any case, they really needed his sign-off. And the reason they need his sign-off on anything is because of that one-vote majority that the Democrats hold in the Senate, which, of course, is even more precarious given the legal troubles of Senator Nicole Mitchell, which would probably be a decent segue into the next issue.
Yeah, and in fact, let's go ahead and talk about Senator Nicole Mitchell, because she is having her ethics hearing today, at least the first day of it. So I'm curious what exactly we can expect from this hearing today, because obviously for Democrats, this poses quite a challenge for them having only that one-seat majority in the state Senate and still bills that they would like to see passed. But they are still trying to hold Nicole Mitchell accountable for what happened with her break-in from a few weeks ago. So what can we expect today from the hearing?
I don't expect that they would take any action. That would be pretty unusual, and it would also set a very disturbing precedent if you were to remove a senator, for instance, on the basis of an arrest, because it certainly doesn't show much respect for the legal systems, the words that are the basis of our legal system, that we're innocent until proven guilty. But it's certainly going to be quite a media circus and another a difficult news cycle for Senate Democrats. I think they probably felt like they had to call this ethics hearing, and they did so quicker than they usually do, than we've seen in the past with ethics hearings. I think they felt like they had to do it, but it's going to be just kind of another circus-like atmosphere surrounding it. And she said she's not going to resign. And if she did resign, you know, they need to have a 33-33 Senate without a way to replace her because it takes too long to get the special election. So they're really not in a great spot because every vote that they take in that 34-33 Senate, Republicans are going to make the claim that it's an illegitimate vote because she doesn't belong there. So it's another tough day for Senate Democrats.
I wonder how this plays into this politically as well, and that's the fact that Donald Trump is scheduled to come to Minnesota on May 17th, and I could very easily picture him making that political fodder saying, well, look at me, I'm being prosecuted for all of my crimes in New York, and here we have Democrats letting one of their own stay in office after basically dressing up like a burglar and then going to a house and breaking in. I wonder if that could play a role in this as well with Trump coming to town on May 17th and just very shortly.
Right. Of course, it works the other way as well. Republicans are up on their high horse about Mitchell and the honor and ethical standards that they supposedly believe so much in, and yet the leader of their party, who's going to be here, is on trial for business for falsifying business records to use hush money for to cover up his affair with a porn star. So it creates an interesting dynamic for both parties, and I'm sure this is why Democrats really want this problem to go away as quickly as possible, and as soon as the session's over, they're going to really lean on Mitchell to resign. I don't know her, and so I don't know what her temperament is, but I just can't imagine that she would want to continue with this continuing in being in the public eye like this, and can certainly imagine wanting to resign as soon as the session is over. And then, frankly, I think everybody forgets about it really quickly. But that's only in the case if she resigns. If she doesn't, then certainly you can see Republicans using this as a campaign issue through the fall, and it certainly negates a lot of, or at least some of the anti-Trump message that Democrats will certainly want to run on.
And no matter what happens with Nicole Mitchell in the coming weeks, whether she resigns immediately or at least does stay in office for a few more weeks to try to help the DFL get a few more bills passed before the end of the session. I am curious, what is the legislature still working on as we approach the end of the session? What differences do House and Senate leaders still need to iron out? I know I was looking through, it looks like they have a bill where large corporations that make $250 million or more in gross domestic sales would have to publicly disclose their tax returns. We also have this that I know they're working on, basically a state-run tax filing system that would kind of mirror the IRS system where Minnesotans could then file their state returns for free, which would certainly be a good thing to have. So I'm curious, what are they working on over the past few weeks, or what are they working on here as we try to close up the session, especially amid what's happening with Nicole Mitchell? Any bills you're thinking that might be able to get through in the next few days and weeks?
Well, luckily for Democrats and those of us who are sympathetic to their aims, they did all their major work last year. They passed a big budget, had a lot of important programs, and passed a lot of other important laws. This year, they are wheezing through the finish line, in part because of the Mitchell issue, but also just being an election year, I think they have a lot of members who are very nervous about November, and they're nervous about taking tough votes. And now this Mitchell situation in the Senate, whenever you have conflict between progressives and moderates, or between the House, which tends to be a little bit more progressive, and the Senate, and you mentioned those tax provisions, a couple of those are not in the Senate bill. It's just going to be very easy for Senate DFL senators to just say, look, it's not the year. We can't have it. We're just, you know, we're barely going to get through here. So luckily, they don't have a super ambitious list of legislative items they're trying to get through. One of them would be a infrastructure bill. They call it around the Capitol a bonding bill. The issue with that is it requires a supermajority, so they need some Republican votes. And so that's usually where Republicans have some leverage, not just on where we spend money on infrastructure projects, but also that can also extend to other policy areas. And so we'll see, you know, Republicans generally have gone along with it, although not always, because they like to see, they often will get good projects that are needed in their districts. But we'll have to see if Republicans think that if they can make enough noise about this session and the Mitchell situation and actually not do a bonding bill, that's always possible. They do need those Republican votes to get it done. Then there's some supplemental budget items that I'm sure everybody would like to have, but it's not, they're not must-do items. The budget year was last year. They passed a two-year budget last year. It was very far-reaching and ambitious. So that's in place. So they're lucky insofar as this incident happened this year, not last year. If it were last year, it would have been a total disaster because they had that long list of ambitious programs and policies there. They eventually did pass, and I'm sure if this had happened a year ago, I think a lot of that would have been a doubt. So not a hugely ambitious to-do list, and but whatever they have left on that list, I think it's going to be a challenge to get it done.
And finally, one more story to hit up before we have to wrap things up today, and that has to do with your column that you recently wrote on United Health Group. Title is, Senators Are Right to Scrutinize United Health, Minnesota's Most Powerful Company, because they recently had their CEO give a testimony at Congress last week, and that's because, recently United Health had a major hack of their what's called their Change Health system, which basically disabled the network that handles about $2 trillion in insurance claims annually. And this hack really ended up hurting a lot of small medical providers because they didn't have another way to get their money back during that period. So I'm curious, what may have we missed from last week's testimony of United Health Group CEO Andrew Witty at the U.S. Senate Committee on Finance? It sounds like he was at least really, really sorry about that hack. Helps, though, when you make $25 million a year. So what may have we missed there? What may have Minnesotans missed last week from that testimony?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea for Minnesotans to try to educate themselves about United Health. Because I think even though it's a hometown company over there in Eden Prairie now, they moved from Minnetonka to Eden Prairie, I think people don't really realize how big and powerful and influential they are and how critics really see them as being far too powerful in such an important industry. And you mentioned the hack of Change Healthcare. And what that did was it disabled those payments from insurers from health insurers to medical providers. In some cases, in many cases, small medical providers who could not go without those payments, they were struggling to meet payroll because of the this malfunction. And I mean, and what's funny about all this is that United Health has this other arm called Optum. It's their health services division. They're going around and buying small practices, which it's like a rather bitterly ironic moment here where these small practices can't get paid. And then Optum is swooping in and offering to buy these practices. So that's one part of the issue here is, and that's why presumably we don't know for sure, but the Justice Department has an antitrust investigation going to determine whether or not the company is engaged in anti-competitive practices. And interestingly, I believe the chair and some senior executives sold stock right before the public became alerted to the antitrust investigation. So that's certainly of interest. And there's been also plenty of reporting, most recently in a story that we ran from the nonprofit journalism outlet called ProPublica, about the extreme lengths that United Health often goes to deny medical care to its policyholders. I think that's sort of a, I call that like an oldie but a goodie when the insurance company refuses to pay for your health and for your health needs. So it's a big, sprawling, incredibly opaque, complex company, and they were in front of the U.S. Senate Committee on Finance over this the hack of their payment system, which had devastating effects across the medical care. But there's a lot that we ought to be examining about this company, and I would hope that Minnesotans would really tune in.
Yeah, I hope they do as well, because it is easy to forget how powerful this company is, which, by the way, just up the road from where we're located here at the station in Eden Prairie, with the expansion they've been doing over years and years, and they keep growing and growing, at least as you note in the column as well. There has been some action from the Biden administration, at least on taking some antitrust actions against them, but still, yeah, a long ways to go with this, with how large United Health has become over the past few years. Well, we are just about out of time. We've been speaking with the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. That's Patrick Coulican. Make sure you follow what the Minnesota Reformer does over at minnesotareformer.com, again, for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. Patrick, as always, thanks for coming on the show today.
Always a pleasure.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.